All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Gideon, how's the Fortnite Battle Pass this week? How's not playing Death Stranding going?
It's going good. I mean, I'm all done with Fortnite Battle Pass. I've been done for maybe 10 days at least
Okay.
or something. So I've just been I haven't been gaming too much. I've been watching more movies and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, with not playing Death Stranding, like it's like I want to give it proper due. I respect the game enough where I don't want to like absentmindedly play it and like miss story stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I need to get back to it, but I've kind of swapped it for playing Ghost of Tsushima to try and get the plat before the end of the year. But I'm like, dude, I'm like bashing my fucking head against the rock. I'm like, I'm so like, I and
What
I like the
with
game.
Ghost?
Yeah, like I like it, but I just like don't like. I'm so over trying to 100% it,
It's
and
so
I'm like.
boring.
It's just like I've done so much of it already before. I'm in New Game Plus and I'm like almost to Act Three and I'm just like it's like it's almost so bad that I'm not excited to get to the sequel soon. I'm like I need more time.
I feel you. Like, actually, all three of us, I think, to some degree or the other, like, agree that Ghost of Tsushima is not what the internet has cracked it up to be. Like, the internet is absolutely gaga for that game, and we're all kind of like more mid on it than that.
Well, like I do like it a lot, but it's like I feel like my enjoyment diminishes severely if you've played a lot of like Sony open world style games like that. Like, but anyways, I'll talk about a couple of movies I've watched. Let's see. So I rewatched for the first time since I think high school, Silence of the Lambs. That was really good.
A classic.
Fun to revisit. It kind of makes me want to read the book. I saw Black Phone 2 in theaters,
Nice.
which I liked quite a bit. I definitely liked it more than the first one. Definitely has some really cringe dialogue and moments in it, but part of the fun, but lots of cool, spooky, wintry, icy themes and like a vibe to it. And some really cool, like gritty 8 millimeter or like super 8 slash like 16 millimeter spooky shots I really appreciated. And then another spooky movie with Ethan Hawke, I watched Sinister for the first time, and that was really fucking freaky. And then lastly, I watched the original 1941 Wolfman or The Wolfman, because I've slowly been going through the classic Universal Monster movies.
The Hammer movies.
Is that what they call them? Okay. So that's what I've been doing lately. Played a little bit of Keeper, that new Double Fine game.
Yes, I've heard good things.
Very beautiful. Kind of gets, a little boring because it is kind of just you're meandering about, just doing like light puzzles and things like that. But haven't played too much. I played some Ball X Pit or Ball Pit, whatever they call it.
Yes, I've heard good things about that.
I'm not as high on it as everybody else is. It's just like not clicking with me. I think it's fun, but it also seems like it's got like a lot of systems and things going on that I just like it's almost like too much for me. I almost wish it was like simpler. So I don't know if I'll
Did
stick with that.
you play any of Vampire Survivors? Because Neil and I both got
Yeah.
hopelessly addicted to that.
I got really into Vampire Survivors. I played it a lot on, I think, through Game Pass, but I do own it on Steam. And I really like Vampire Survivors. I honestly want to get back to it. That's
Did you
kind of the
see that
main.
they have a Vampire Survivors expansion pack that's a Bellatro expansion pack?
No, I did not.
Yeah, you're like drawing Joker cards to get your multipliers up and everything. It's
Dude.
crazy. It's crazy.
Nice. Didn't they add a co-op or something
Yeah,
recently or
there's like a
something?
million different. I kind of like played the original vanilla game and then kind of fell off just because they've added so much shit to it. And it's a game that like I almost feel bad about enjoying it so much. It'd be like kind of saying like PCP is my favorite food. You know, that's like. It's like, yes, I'm consuming it, but like that's not really in the spirit of the question, you know what I mean? So yeah, I haven't really touched Vampire Survivor since like it came out and I've like finished it. Just probably just for the betterment of my own health, but
I get that.
Good. Well, good. I'm glad you're watching a lot. You're jumping around some different games. Good.
Oh, last thing I've been watching, I wanted to mention, not a movie, but they did a new, there's a new It show called, I think it's It, like Welcome to Derry or whatever.
Right.
That first episode was fucking ripped, dude. Really
Okay.
good.
Good.
Bill Skarsgård, the guy who played Pennywise in the It Chapter 1 and 2 movie,
Right.
he's coming back to play Pennywise again.
Awesome.
So
Cool.
can't wait. Really, really excited about that.
That's
But yeah,
good.
that's
All right.
about it for
Well,
me.
all right, getting well, good to hear. Neil, what is what you've been up to? I know you're struggling to think of what to DoorDash for dinner right now. I mean, what you've been watching, what you've been playing, consuming, how the job search going? Catch me up.
Well, I've been dealing with a little bit of a cold, which you guys are gonna have to deal with my strange noises throughout most of the night, unfortunately. Which has been less than fun, but I took some time and I've revamped my resume. And I'm back on the grind of writing cover letters. I'm trying to be intentional with them. I've got a few job applications out there. I'm trying to be a little less picky as well, as far as just like, maybe I have to, take a backward step to get like an entry level position, and then, I'm changing career fields. That maybe I've been a little proud, shall we say. And then I'm planning to retake that certification quiz this coming Monday. So hopefully I'll
Okay,
pass that.
cool. Yeah, you got to get in as a tester or a software, like a bug crusher somewhere. I mean, those positions are usually pretty entry level.
But other than that, being sick kind of limited my going out and whatnot. So haven't been playing a ton of games. Play A little bit of a relapse with Stardew Valley, but been writing a little bit, and I think I mentioned last time that I had been enjoying season one of Gen V,
Oh yeah.
which kind of fell apart at the end for me. Like not so much that it ruined the whole experience, but the basically there are two heel turns at the end of the season. And one of them I did not like at all, and one of them I thought was actually one of the best heel turns I've ever seen.
Oh wow.
At least from like a character motivation. Like I was kind of like, oh, I get it. This is a good heel turn, and it's not how you would normally have like anticipated the character going about it. So I give him kudos on that. But then I followed that up with season four of The Boys, which was okay. I think that they're getting a little too much into the like I think like the very first episode has one of those like any like comparisons to real people or real events is totally coincidental. And it's like, no, this is clearly like Trumpist America and non-Trumpist America. Like, they're not even trying to like be subtle with it. It's just like hitting you over the head. And I'm not trying to like, make a political statement here, but it's like, I get it. Like, you don't you've stepped over the line where it's like satire anymore. Now it's just like, but still fun to watch at points. I'm gonna move on to Gen V season two. See where that goes, and then I think the final season of The Boys comes out relatively soon. So,
Nice.
I'm glad that they're not pulling like a Game of Thrones where they just like keep pushing it out further and further to the point like it gets totally ruined.
Right.
I think I'm glad that they know that like, we're running out of material here. We can let it end.
Is the fifth season gonna be the last one?
That's what they've said.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, I'm glad you got something on the horizon to look forward to, like The Boys. That sounds like the, you know, it'd be nice if they wrapped it up before it got bad. I have been struggling with the opposite of that recently because we committed to like watching the entire Boondocks series.
Nice.
And really like the Boondocks, and I had never seen any of the third or fourth season, but the fourth season, I believe, did not have the involvement of Aaron Magruder, the original creator of the show. So seasons 1, 2, and 3 are really, really good, and season 4 is like not good at all. Like it just doesn't. It's like all the same characters, all the same voice actors, but it doesn't have that. Really, like Aaron Magruder, I think has like a really interesting point of view. He's just like a really interesting dude to read about. Like he has like obviously some very like far lefty opinions, and then he's like kind of far right on some other stuff. Like he's just like kind of all over the place, and I think that makes him like an interesting person to listen to. And that show had such a unique voice and a point of view, and did like some really groundbreaking, interesting episodes. Over the years, and to see it kind of devolve in that fourth season into like, I don't know, just like there's like an episode about the Kardashians, there's an episode about Siri and the iPhone. It just turned into like a topical kind of like, what's Granddad and the Boys' take on, you know, this thing that was popular in 2010, you know, and it's less about like the race relations in the United States, which is like the entire point of the show and what made it like really good and interesting. So yeah, we finished that up. Glad to be done with that. Grace and I are working through Cowboy Bebop now.
Oh, finally.
Yeah, nice. I know. So got it on Blu-ray, ordered it in, been watching that. I finished Ghost of Yote and thought it was basically exactly like Ghost of Tsushima in every way. So getting you've got that look to look forward to. If you're really sick of Ghost of Tsushima right now, you're really going to be sick of it by the end of Ghost of Yote.
Do you think it's like... Does it have an edge over Tsushima?
I think it's slightly better because I think Jin is not very interesting as a character. Like I think Jin and all the shit with his uncle is the stupidest shit ever. Like it's like uncle, who cares about the honor of like the like? I think that game would have been like more interesting, like with a morality system where it's like yeah, maybe you get something for being honorable. But I don't know. I think Ghost of Tsushima, like the main story of that game is really kind of like boring. And I think Jin is really boring. And I think Atsu is way better than Jin. She's a little bit more interesting. And the core story I think is a little bit stronger. That said, I thought the game ended like horribly. And I still think it's like on the same level as Tsushima, which is like, a 6 or a 7, not an 8 or a 9, like everybody thinks it is. You know, it's like probably one of the weakest first party games in my opinion, like both of them. But you know, like that's still pretty good. I mean, like Sony first party doesn't really release like abject trash. So like in a first party that's mostly filled with like 8s and 9s, I'm comfortable saying that Tsushima is like one of the worst first party games, aside from like Lost Soul aside and things that don't like really count as. You know, like Sony technically funded them, but they didn't like make them or you know, whatever, things like that. So, that was pretty bad. Gideon also knows that Neil, I don't think I've informed you of this, but I have been running Resident Evil 2, the original game, incessantly since like the middle of like a couple weeks ago. Like I finished RE2, the original PS1 game. And there are bonuses for finishing it quickly and getting certain rankings on it and like speed running it doing it many, many times in a row. So I've been playing it like once a day for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I saw you posting like you finished like Claire's campaign in like 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I was kind of shocked that you could finish a game like that in that amount of time.
Oh, yes. The world record is actually like 1 hour and 3 minutes, which I don't even understand how, like, I don't understand how somebody could shave my time in half because I'm sprinting to every single door. But yes, there's some true psychos out there. So, I'm like, I've got a few playthroughs left to unlock Tofu, who is like the very last thing you can unlock, and then I'm officially done. So I'm getting pretty good at the game. I'm like, when I'm going to bed at night, I'm thinking like, could I like cut out this room and run past this room and not pick up this item and like still make it to the end of the game to like shave a few minutes off my time? And so I'm like, I'm in that zone where I'm like always thinking about it, and I'm like trying to figure out how to play it better. So it's it's been good. It's been pretty fun, although I'm kind of ready to move on at this point. So anyway, let's talk about movies. Let's talk about what we came here to talk about this week, which is the 1981 movie Possession. Gideon, what made you want to bring this movie to the podcast?
So a number of things. To celebrate your new marriage, let's watch a movie about divorce. Obviously, I can't take full credit for that joke. Alyssa mentioned that, and that was just too funny. This movie, I remember like way back, like just reading like articles of like top 100 films you got to watch, stuff like that. And this is like way before I had watched any horror stuff, was really not into horror at all. And I remember like just seeing screen caps of this and being like, what the hell is going on in this movie? And I was like too like afraid to watch it. I finally watched it for the first time about a year and a week ago, I think. And I didn't really remember too much since my first watch, because I feel like there's just like a lot of different areas this movie goes, and a lot's going on in it, and it can be pretty, maybe not fast paced, but just chaotic. And I don't really know anybody else who's seen it besides me and Alyssa, so I thought it'd be a fun one to kind of round out spooky season. And yeah, I was just kind of curious what you guys would think about it. And I just think it's kind of a wild movie with some pretty electric performances. Yeah, that's kind of why
so-
I brought it.
So I'm sorry, but how did you first hear about it though?
Yeah, I think it was through just like those lists of just like top 100, or like a YouTube video of just like crazy movies that you got to check out, just something like that.
Because I feel it's pretty rare for like, you know, I'm not like the ultimate film buff, but I know enough to get me in trouble, and it's pretty rare that I haven't like even heard of a movie.
Had you not heard of this one at all?
I had not heard of it at all. Neil, had you heard about this at all?
Maybe I had heard the name and knew nothing about it. So, like, you know, nothing if... Yeah, next nothing if I knew anything.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I had, like, heard about it through those videos or those articles, and I knew it had some kind of stature or, like, renown about it. Like, it was kind of like a lauded cult movie, let's say.
Right.
That's about the extent I knew.
Well, you know, like if you would have asked me, hey, is there a movie called Possession? I probably would have been like, yeah, probably. I don't know. It sounds like there's probably, you know, 13 movies made about possession probably between the years of 2005 and 2025, right? But I was surprised that there was just a movie called just Possession, and I had never heard of it before, and it was like this critically acclaimed art house movie. Do you guys, this is kind of a obscure reference, do you guys know what I'm talking about, where there's that really early Family Guy joke about Diane Simmons doing like an art film in college, that she's like the news reporter, and it's like this black and white movie, and it's like real like weird, and there's like a clown in the background like flipping flapjacks like ominously. You guys know this like cutaway gag?
I've got like a vague recollection of this in the back of my head.
Okay, that is exactly what this movie reminded me of. I'll try to find the clip. You said you'd never heard of this before. Tell me more about that. I mean, you just weren't familiar with it at all, or is there any other movie by the same director that you guys have seen? I mean, like, I didn't even recognize the name of the director at all.
I don't think I've seen anything else.
I'm pulling him up on IMDb right now. Like, you know, when I first looked at it, I was like, oh, Sam Neill. Love Sam Neill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That was another reason why I brought it.
I'm just running down. Nothing looks familiar to me.
Yeah, I don't recognize a single other film.
He doesn't have a super long filmography. I think it looks like 17 writing credits, 18 directing credits. So I'm gonna bet
it might be like a Terrence Malick situation where he's just done like a few things and he's just like just this weirdo. All the movies you guys have ever seen in your life, what are the biggest comparisons to Possession to give people an idea of kind of like what we're dealing with here? Because I feel like you could describe the plot vaguely to somebody and they would be like, okay, well, that doesn't sound like the weirdest thing ever. You know what I mean? Like, if you just describe the synopsis, it wouldn't do justice to it. Like, the two movies that came to mind for me were, well, first of all, that weird Family Guy bit that I just mentioned, but obviously, like, Eraserhead was a big one.
I was gonna say, yeah.
This movie has Eraserhead written all over it, except that I think Eraserhead is like way better than this. And the other one is Videodrome.
Okay.
Did either of those come to mind for you guys?
Not necessarily. I really am having trouble even thinking of something to compare it to, because I really don't feel like I've seen any other movie that's quite like this. I feel like it's pretty unique in a lot of ways. I don't know, but it has some of that bleakness, or just kind of depressive atmosphere, almost like that was in the wrestler, but in like a different way.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense, especially with like the color palette, you know.
I was going to talk about the color. Do you guys want to just talk about the color palette?
Sure.
Go for it.
Because I was going to mention that like one of the things that really stood out to me about this movie was it's like drab. I know that it was shot in West Berlin, but it almost seems like Soviet bloc, bleak, white, blue gray color palette that just permeates the entire thing. I am ethnically Bohemian, so this is like a look into like there's something in my DNA that sees this kind of surrounding and says, ah, I'm home. But it was a disturbing looking, but also like a very softly kind of an icy beauty to it, I think. I don't know. What'd you guys think about how it looked? I thought it was just so stark. Everybody looks like the whitest person I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. This movie. I mean, I love some of just the like locations they go to,
mm-hmm.
and the way the buildings and like homes look, especially like the house at the very end of the movie. I'm like, oh my God, I would love to stay there. That looks so cool. Like the railing and stuff and the weird, like dilapidated apartment that she has like in secret, which mm-hmm. we'll get to that later. But I just like was eating it up as far as like the set design and the it has such like a melancholic beauty to it that I really, really dig. And even how the blue-gray color palette kind of seeps into the very, like, white faces and the, like, dark blue dress she wears throughout most of the movie. Even having the white, like, gauze on her neck at one point. Also, it's, like, it's very, like, sterile looking at times, but also mixed with sometimes just, like, really disgusting gross imagery, whether it's like super disheveled, their clothing's all gross and grimy, and or they're like really sweaty, and or just like the kid has like jam all over his hands and face and stuff, just all kinds of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the jam isn't nearly as bad as this gets over the course of it. There's
a lot worse things.
It's going to be a lot worse things than the jam, unfortunately. What are you going to say?
So, obviously, this doesn't get the same color palette, but one movie that kind of stood out to me as a comparison in terms of like visuals outside of color was The Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like, so that like growing degradation, I think, like, again, interesting sets that are, you know, like sort of hidden away areas, and like, I'm not doing the greatest job of presenting this. Again, I'm sorry about the cold, but I feel like there's definitely some parallels there, along with some of the thematic, like psychosexual stuff.
I guess one thing I could also compare it to, I just thought of, but Suspiria, but not the one we've seen, the new one, the remake.
Yeah.
Which I think is also like West Berlin, stuff like that, witches and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so for our viewers' sake, Gideon, do you want to try to give as much of a plot synopsis as you can give? I know that is somewhat of a Herculean task. Like, I don't know about you guys, but do you remember like when we talked about Tron and I was like, if I'm confused in the first 5 minutes, like I'm in a bumpy ride. And this was kind of immediately like that for me, where it was like everybody's talking so weird and he's like in this giant room with his superiors, and I'm not even sure what he does for a living, but he's been off for a long time and everybody's acting like a total nut job, like from the get-go. So I had a hard time kind of following exactly what was going on, but do you want to kind of give it your...
Yeah, so I guess if I was to do just kind of a quick plot summary, it seems like Sam Neill is like a spy or something of some sort. He's been away in like a war for a while, comes back home. As soon as he gets home, maybe even just before he got home, his wife had mentioned how like she wants a divorce. And throughout most of the movie, she's kind of like on and off with him, where she like almost kind of wants to be with him, but then she has this other lover that she's like staying with, and she's like visiting the house and with the kid, and then she's gone, and he's like not almost like trying to win her back, but trying to make things like copacetic. And so things are like at least some kind of normalcy can return for the family and for their kid, Bob. And then it just gets like stranger and stranger and becomes almost like a creature feature, which I feel like can be like metaphoric for lots of different things regarding like infidelity in marriage or just relationships in general. And it just kind of gets really out there, and by the end it is like, I almost wonder if there's like the doppelgangers and stuff going on, where it's almost like, are these like idealized versions of the other partner or spouse? And I guess that's kind of what I got for now.
Neil, anything you want to add to that?
I don't know that I'm the best to ask. I watched this when I had like probably the worst night of fever that I've had.
Oh no.
Perfect.
So, you know, it was definitely an interesting experience with that. But if you asked me to tell you what was happening, I might not. I almost feel bad offering a rating on this at the end of the episode.
Yeah. That's like, I think when I had COVID, I had like the first time, for whatever reason, I decided that was going to be a good weekend to watch. Like, I watched like Hereditary and then The Shining like back to back or whatever. Jeez. And it just like totally fucked me up.
trying to exercise it out of you.
Yeah, something like that. So I don't know. Jesus, where do we even go with this? I will say I thought the performances in this movie were quite good. Did anybody else feel like that? Like, I thought Sam Neill was like super good in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned at the top, I think the performances are electric. Like, I think they are both almost like neck and neck at times. And one thing, I feel like some people that aren't really big on horror or like horror averse, let's say, they might like fail to realize, but like horror can have a lot of really good comedy in it too. And one part that really got me just in terms of a laugh, it is when Sam Neill is tweaking the fuck out in the rocking chair, and he's like rocking way back, and then like his wife comes in and he just like has these crazy eyes, and it's just like so funny to me how he's like acting. But I love seeing like the desperation in him and how he's going to these crazy lengths, like he's hiring like someone to follow her and like spy on her, and even like also a kind of comedic moment when he visits the lover, and he is so much like I think it's Heinrich his name is, but the Heinrich is such a the lover character in so much of the sense where like he's literally like touching Sam Neill and is like almost like wanting to also be in love with him and have him love him. And you know, when he's like, "Is your mom here when you're fucking my wife?" He's like, "Of course." It's like just so funny to me. And he almost like flamingo like dance fights with him. And I think Heinrich is like an underrated character. And even Bob, I feel like, you know, sometimes child actors can be really annoying, but I feel like he did a really good job for what it was. And yeah, I just think like the performances combined with some of the very intimate like close-up shots are so like entrancing and mesmerizing to me. Where because like even before I'd seen it, you know, I'd seen the screenshots of the movie and it just always stuck in my mind. I was like, what is this movie about? Like, what is going on? So I think the biggest praise I could heap is towards the performances next to like the way it was shot.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. I think in particular the actress who I don't know her
Isabel
name.
Adjani.
Yeah, let's just say Miss Ajani then did a phenomenal job at just being totally unhinged. Like that scene in particular in the subway tunnel where she's just having a total like psychobilly meltdown and like
With the groceries.
yeah, the groceries and she's like drooling on all the floors. Blood and there's all sorts of crazy shit happening. I mean, that's just one of those you know, she just went for it and you gotta respect it, like I didn't understand what the hell was going on in this movie, but I was sure as shit paying attention during during that bit of it.
I was going to say that this movie depends on having European actors.
Oh, what do you mean by
Like
that?
you said with her performance of her just like going totally crazy. I have a hard time of thinking of like a big name American actress who would do the same thing.
Yeah,
That's
that's
fair.
true. It does take a certain amount of what's the word I'm looking for? You know, selfless being able to throw yourself into your you know, into the craft and throw away your chances of being in a mainstream movie ever again to want to take on a role like this. And absolutely. I mean, they did it. Although Sam Neill obviously went on to do bigger and better things. Although I'm not really sure he did. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I don't think he did really too much after Jurassic Park. I mean, I'm sure he did stuff, but obviously he did not, you know, become like Samuel L. Jackson or anything like that. Although I will say that everything I've seen him in, he's really great. And so I'm a little surprised that he hasn't been more prolific in the years since then.
Yeah, it seems like he still had steady work. I'm just trying to think of like really
I mean,
stand out.
Event Horizon, of course, and all-time classic, man. That was so good.
He did a couple movies with John Carpenter. In the Mouth of Madness is really good.
Cool. I still
But
need
yeah,
to watch that.
I also remember seeing him on, in like as a kid, my mom would put on PBS and they'd have Masterpiece Theater on Sunday nights, and he'd be in a bunch of those like British like 4-episode dramas where they like do a I was gonna say Charles Darwin, that's not right. Charles Dickens or like a Pride and Prejudice-esque kind of story.
Okay, let's see here. I just lost my spot. I'm trying to get back to the possession page from the Sam Neill page. Gideon, what else do you want to pull out with this movie? I feel like you've always got a bunch of notes taken about like exactly where you want to land on.
Stuff like this. So we should obviously talk about some of the monster element stuff. But before we get to that, do want to mention a little bit with like the soundtrack. I thought the soundtrack was pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. I really like the theme that I think is at like the beginning and the end of the movie. I love, you know, we've talked about the melancholic atmosphere and gloom that's kind of permeating throughout this whole movie. Some of the comedic moments with like Heinrich. Also, his motorcycle is so badass. Just gotta say. One quick thing I wanted to mention about the cinematography. I think maybe one of my favorite shots, besides like the up close shots we have of like the characters' faces, is when Sam Neill is like driving the motorcycle and he's going through almost those like tunnels through those buildings, and then he like crashes it. Like, I think that is just like absolutely beautiful. And just even there's such a sense of like paranoia too in this movie, especially when she's being like tailed. And so obviously when she gets tailed by that detective or private investigator, whatever he is, and we find this absolutely disgusting slime creature, humanoid monster thing that she's apparently like having sex with. The first time I watched this, I was just like so shocked at like what a turn it was from just this like, you know, not super straightforward, but like a more just straight drama movie, and this thing about their divorce and just these characters clashing and then becoming this almost like creature feature. And it's just so disgusting. You're like, what the fuck is this? What does this mean? And by the end of it, she says, oh, it's like, oh, it's done now. Like, it's completed. And you see this like almost like a perfect unharmed version of Sam Neill. That's, you know, this weird doppelganger. And I was thinking about it and talking with Alyssa about it, because she had seen it the first time with me. She didn't watch the whole thing on the second watch. But I wonder, is like, it, you know, it's like if you got cheated on, you would almost see the other or whoever they cheated on you with as this disgusting being that totally repulses you. Like, how could you do that? How could you be with that? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like when she says it's done, it's like completed. It's like, are they going through a number of different partners kind of over and over? Because it sounds like she does it with obviously Heinrich, and then I think even the detective guy or private investigator guy. And it sounds like it's like, oh, maybe I like this about this aspect of this partner, but I don't like this, or I like this aspect, I don't like this. And then they finally whittle it down to, it's like, this is my idealized version of what I want my partner to be, or like, mm-hmm. how you could dream someone up in their head without actually like being with them. Because she's not really with her husband too much. She's away so much, you know? So that's what I kind of wonder. It's like in their heads, this idealized version. Same with the school teacher. You know, Sam Neill seems like he wants his wife to be very like loving and gentle and like caring, and therefore their kid, because obviously when he goes on that like 3-week bender or whatever he's doing, and Bob is just by himself for like 3 weeks in the house, just getting disgusting. And whenever he visits the school teacher, she's like super sweet and gentle. And even when she comes by that one time, he has to like take a phone call. He's like, oh, can you like help him finish washing up or whatever? And he just like hands her like the towel or whatever, and mm-hmm. and the sponge. So that's kind of what I got on this rewatch with the weird, nasty creature thing. Is it more like a metaphor for that disgust of like being cheated on, when you're, you know, supposedly in a committed relationship or marriage, yeah, or whatever. And I think it, I mean, I could totally understand where you're coming from, Sam, with being just like, you're really thrown into it at the beginning, and things are happening really quickly, and there's a lot going on. And I do think this is definitely the type of movie that lends itself to multiple viewings, but I still don't fully understand what a lot of it means and different things. Like, one thing I noticed that I don't even remember if I noticed this the first time I watched, but early on in the film, his like superiors are asking him, one of them asking, like, does the guy you're spying on, like, does he still wear pink socks? And then at the end of the movie, the one of the guys who's trying to get him basically back into espionage or whatever, he's wearing pink socks. And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, what is that about? You know? So I've been going on and on, but I don't know. There's a lot of threads to pull out with this movie. And I just think it's very interesting, bizarre movie. It's kind of one of a kind.
Yeah, I mean, something I'll say on the creature is that they pulled a Metal Gear Solid 5 here, and that they spoil that. I didn't know anything about this movie, but they spoil that the creature is going to be in here in the opening credits, because they're like, oh, directed by so-and-so, and then they say special creature effects by this guy, and I'm like, oh, so there's going to be oh, some really? Crazy, yeah. They're gonna, I was like, oh, there's going to be some totally fucked up weird monster in here, which I, you know, like, I wouldn't have thought that at all. If they wouldn't have said that, but
I totally like, missed that multiple times.
Yeah. They say it right in the beginning, and I said, "Well, fuck!" Like, now I know that there's going to be, like, they're like walking creepily into this apartment. I'm like, "Well, okay, here comes the big nasty monster. Here we go."
Like, we mentioned that Event Horizon also kind of like ruins itself with that opening shot. Do you think that? Do you think it's like a Sam Neill curse?
Yeah, that's like in the beginning of Jurassic Park, where in the credits it says a dinosaur supervisor, Phil, whatever. It's like, dude, where were you the whole time? This dinosaurs are fucking out of control, dude. They need to be supervised.
Dino Wrangler.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, so people got to be, you got to be careful about that with credits. I mean, it's like I said, it's like in Metal Gear 5 when any mission starts up and it's like guest starring the, what, Neil, what are they called in 5, that weird unit that shows up? That
was the,
like,
skulls.
The skull unit. Yeah, it's like every time you start up a mission, it's like special guest star, the skull unit. I'm like, ah, fuck, here we go with the skull unit. So the same thing, like, you know, I probably wouldn't have thought that there was going to be this big freakazoid monster in here until they kind of spoiled it up front. So, Neil, what did you did this trip your body horror sensibilities? I mean, what did you think of the?
It's pretty gross. You know, I was shifting in my seat a little bit. At the same time, I think the fever also kind of mitigated my normal reaction. I think I'm gonna have to rewatch this to like really give it a fair shake, but you know, I was thoroughly uncomfortable in my own way.
It's disgusting. It's so slimy, and when you see the eyeballs it has.
Ugh. Yeah. So here's my question, Gid. You know, it's so gross and dirty and nasty. So obviously you're going to give this a 1, like Waterworld, right? Yeah.
But it has so many other things that I like that make me appreciate it more. And I will say, I will rewatch Waterworld, because I love practical effects so much, and Waterworld is practical effects to the max. That I was probably harsher on it for lots of different reasons, but... You know, I don't know. It's just it's a thing. Even like we had talked about before, where sometimes like I'll have such a negative reaction to how much of like an asshole a character is, but then in other movies I'm like eating it up. It's just like the character's like really enjoyable or entertaining for me. So it's just your mileage may vary on whatever the movie is for me. I don't know what to tell you.
I will say, out of the three of us, I always find your scores hardest to predict. But that's okay. That's fine. You're the wild card. You're like Charlie in
Sunny.
And always Sunny. Wild card.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't, you know, at first I was kind of confused as to the nature of the creature, because like you first kind of like see it through a door and it's not like really clear what's going on. And then like the second time they go into the apartment, it's more clear that it's like this physical thing that's in a bed when the private detective comes in. I don't know about you guys. My favorite segment in this whole movie was watching the PI trail the wife back to her apartment, like through the streets of the city. That was like the part that had like the most of an actual plot to me.
That was a
joy. And if you guys like that bit, I highly recommend Les Samurai with Alain Delon, the French New Wave cinema movie, because that's the entire movie.
Okay.
It's like just 2 hours of that. So, 1967. Yeah, sometime in the 60s. Actually, Alain Delon's suit in that movie is exactly the suit that I picked out for my wedding, just because I thought it looked totally badass. So
I'm adding it to my watch list right now.
Yeah, that was all good. I watched it on the plane to Tokyo, and it was cool. Yeah, so I'm not really sure what I thought it was, but obviously it's some like psychosexual metaphor, and it's very disturbing that she's in bed with this thing. I could see why it was banned in a few countries, but on the other hand, like, you know, I don't know if it was all like that much crazier than like Eraserhead or The Thing or all these other movies. I think maybe banning it was maybe a little bit of a like, why the I don't really see why this is banned, I guess.
I feel like it is probably the sexual element.
Yeah,
I don't have that with the thing, or even Eraserhead is more like implied, I guess. But
yeah, I don't know. I feel like Blue Velvet came out like a few years after this. I feel like Blue Velvet is like so much more intense than this movie is. So Isabella Rossellini isn't having sex with a giant squid demon thing, but you know, still, I don't know. Let's see. We only got a few minutes. Oh, go ahead. Good.
I want to ask what you guys think the ending means, because I'm kind of perplexed by the very end of it, where it's like both of the ideal selves, right? The school teacher version and the like perfect Sam Neill that doesn't get shot by the bullets, you know, doesn't get hit or whatever.
Right.
They are in this very beautiful home, and Bob's there. He's playing with like army men and eating cereal or whatever. And Bob is tweaking out, and he's like, no, don't let him in, don't, you know, and he runs upstairs, and he jumps face first into the bathtub full of water, presumably drowning himself, and then there's, like, you can hear, like, bombing and, like, air raid sirens, and then it just kind of ends. I don't really know what all that means, and I feel like I'm going to have to keep watching to try and glean something from it, but I was curious what you guys think.
So before Sam answers, can I just ask, Gideon, are you saying that Sam Neill finds himself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife and asks
how
himself,
did I get here?
How did he get here?
Exactly.
Yeah. I have no fucking idea what the end of this movie means. I was just kind of along for the vibes by the end of it. I was just like, okay, everybody's gonna act insane and I'm probably not supposed to understand it. I would have to watch some like people smarter than me on YouTube break down what's going on, but at the end of this movie, for me to totally get it.
I get that,
or to have like a smart answer. I don't know about you, Neil.
Yeah, like I said, I need to rewatch this to like really give it an analysis, like
Well, maybe over Christmas we'll do like a rewatch. Ho ho ho! Happy holidays.
watch it with
the family, you know.
Yeah. Well, it is a family film, you know.
Yeah, it really is in some ways.
Just like Ari Aster, he's like my favorite family film director, you know.
That was my other point of comparison. Is I was thinking about Beau Is Afraid a lot during this movie.
Okay.
That was like probably my, I think if like Beau Is Afraid and Eraserhead had a baby, it would be Possession.
Nice.
which can be, I think, either damning or praising, depending on where you stand on those things.
Yeah.
So we're almost out of time. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Any last things you guys want to bring up about Possession?
I do like seeing how Sam Neill kind of oscillates between this like desperation and at times like extreme like jubilee, almost, especially when he's like essentially plotting like Heinrich's murder, and how he like, you know, Heinrich gets stabbed and Heinrich like wants help, and he makes it look like he like killed himself or like drowned in his own vomit in the bathroom, which I feel like if I was a policeman, I'd be like, why is there a shoe in the toilet? You know, I was like, mm-hmm. This doesn't make sense. And just seeing that, and I really just like seeing like the spectrum of crazy that's in this movie, not just with Sam Neill, but Isabel Adjani as well. And even the, I forget her name, the Margie or whatever, she was just kind of an interesting kind of throwaway character that it's like their craziness is reaching even like her friends and stuff, and this violence between them is like she got killed too, and she was like such a minor character. So I think that's it for now for me.
I think one, and maybe this isn't the, maybe this just isn't the movie that they were going for or trying to make, and I'm probably wrong with this. I think something that would have made it stronger for me is if there's crazy shit happening in the world, you can't have everybody in the world be totally insane, because it makes the actual crazy shit seem like more mundane somehow, right? Like, everybody in this movie is such a nightmare, and it almost feels like you're in a dream. So like when crazy stuff starts happening, I'm like, yeah, of course there's this weird squid demon sex monster in the room. Like, it's not that surprising at this point. I think it would have helped me if there would have been like this movie would have been stronger if it would have been made almost like a normal movie. If that makes sense, like if there was like a like normal storytelling and plot and characters that weren't acting like totally weird and crazy, and then all of a sudden like you like they track this woman and she's got this weird thing, like I think that would have been like a more interesting strong movie. But like the extreme weird vibes of it almost makes it like you know, it's like how when you're swimming, even if you're swimming really hard, you don't feel yourself sweating because you're in the pool. That's kind of how I feel about this movie. Like, nothing seems that weird because everything is insanely weird.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? That would be like if I was like gonna change this movie, I suppose that's kind of like the biggest change I would probably make. Well, guys, coming up on the 9 o'clock mark, so speak now, forever hold your peace. Neil, any final thoughts on Possession?
Again, I really need to rewatch this. I was not, I didn't do my homework properly, I think, is the long and the short of this. So I'm going to give it a *3 for now. I think it's really well crafted, like you guys said. There's some really strong performances, but I need to pay attention and not be like fevered out of my mind while I'm watching it. To
yeah,
totally fair.
To give it due diligence. That said, watching it while kind of like fever high was definitely an experience. I'm not saying get yourself sick and do that, but you know, there was there was something going on there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat where like I feel like, you know, I watched it in two parts. I had a busy week, so you know, I watched part of it yesterday during the day, and then the rest of it this morning as soon as I woke up. And it was fine like that. But I almost feel like this is a movie that necessitates like a in theater, other people, you know, like this would be like a great trial on 35 millimeter kind of movie. Yeah. And you know, just the distractions of daily life. I mean, I wasn't like coom brained on my phone the whole time, but like, you know, just like listening for my work laptop to ding or like waiting for emails to come in while watching it wasn't particularly conducive to the whole experience. So I'm like Neil, I would say like a 2 with an asterisk right now. And that asterisk basically just reads like, I think there's a lot of room for this movie to grow in my mind, yeah, with like a future watching or future viewing and a bit more. But certainly on a first viewing, it was not, you know, like my favorite thing in the world. But again, like I could very easily, like I probably felt the same way about Eraserhead, obviously, like, honestly, initially. So I would be very willing to like reevaluate this in the future. Like I said, for a family friendly Christmas episode.
That's right. Yep. Invite mom and dad over. Got a family film.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I definitely get where you guys are coming from. Almost similar, like Mandy. When I first watched Mandy, I was not hot on it. I think I gave it like a 3, just thought it was kind of very bizarro, strange. Wasn't really understanding a lot of the praise and stuff. But now, with how many times I've seen Mandy, I think like 3 or 4, it's like a 5. Like, I really adore and appreciate it. And I feel like this movie is similar, where I remember just kind of being like jolted by this movie, and it had just been stuck in my head, even to a similar way of just how those still images were just from it before even seeing it. And it is a very, very strong 4. I basically give it a 4.5. It's probably going to be a 5 on my next watch. And I think it has a potential to become one of my favorite horror movies. And I think it's just very like powerful and strange, and like you had mentioned, Sam, like it does have this dreamlike and nightmarish quality to it. And I feel like they capture that like panicky desperation of like breakup energy, you could say, like that's so palpable and tangible through this. And I really think I would have a lot of fun like digging into like special features and yeah, like video essays, just trying to dig in and better understand this movie. I love the performances, almost even more so. I love the locations it's shot at and the color grade. I just think it looks so I love the gloomy, beautiful, gray, drab blue of it all. But there's still so much I don't understand, like the ending and what's going on with like the spy stuff and the dude with the pink socks and different things like that. I just think I can totally see why it's such like a cult hit. But yeah, for now I will just give it a very strong 4.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to end it. Like the thing I keep coming back to is I think it's a movie that, you the more you're going to get from you're going to get more from it the more you put into it, and as of this point I just have not put that much into it. It's like the classic Criterion movie that you really need to work at to like, but there is something there if you dig a little bit more. So I think we've got officially one more movie left for spooky season, although next week when we do it it'll be November. That's okay, so, though. I know my wedding kind of threw things off, so.
Okay.
Well, I since it's going to be my pick, I actually thought about this, and so nice. I thought a good transition would be a Nick Cage horror movie.
No.
So my pick for next week is going to be The Color Out of Space.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Okay. Awesome, man. I have not seen it either. I'm excited to see this shit. This isn't the same director as Mandy, is it?
No. Richard Stanley, it says.
Okay.
And Mandy, let me look it up.
Mandy is Panos Cosmatos. I remember that because I remember the name being like, yep, that was like, that sounds like a guy who would direct Mandy.
Yeah.
But it's based on a H.P. Lovecraft story.
That's right.
Interesting. Nice. Okay. Well, yeah, I'll see you guys next week for that then.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, peace out, guys. Neil, what did you decide to get for dinner?
I got a DQ chicken strip basket.
Nice.
You know what? That sounds like it would hit the spot right now.
Oh, did you want to share your Chinese story?
Oh, no. We'll save that for next time.
All right. Next time, we'll talk about Chinese food. See you guys.
See you guys. Bye, guys.